The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, listen.
Get over here.
Someday I'm going to find out what the gain knob does on this microphone. I just have it set perfectly to 12 o'clock noon, just pointed straight up, and everything else in terms of like volume sensitivity seems like I can control that in software, so I don't. I only have one knob on this microphone. It's gain, and I don't know
what
it does.
Hey, listener, if you're hearing this episode, that was the right position for the gain knob to be in.
It sure was.
Yeah. That's Adam Ganser.
That is. It's me. I'm Adam Ganser, one of the hosts of One Upsmanship, and the other voice you've heard is, you say your name now, sir.
I say it? See,
yeah.
No one ever gets this right. Abe fucked this up, too. If I say yours, you say mine. I'm telling you.
Oh, is that the rule? Okay.
Let me just say this. I admire the cohesion that the Threedom team have. If Lauren Lapka says, I'm, you know, Paul F. Tompkins, then Paul says, I'm Scott Aukerman, and Scott says, I'm Lauren Lapka. Like, why can't we get this? Why can't we do that?
That's why they pay Paul Tompkins the podcast money.
Big pod money.
Yeah, that's because he knows that.
Whoever we said, I forget. I'm Paul F. Tompkins, and this is One Upsmanship. Woo. Welcome, welcome. That voice you hopefully heard, because the gain knob was set directly at 12 noon, as it should always be, is Mr. Jason Pargin, a.k.a. David Wong. Welcome, Jason.
Professional podcast guest, Jason Pargin.
PPG. That's right. And we're here to talk about... We just decided which one we were going to do first.
Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited about
Me
this
too.
One. It's one of the first sort of tentpole stalwart vanguards, if you will, of next gen, specifically PS5 exclusive. And I guess let's just dive right into it, right? So we got to pass
Absolutely.
A checkpoint,
yep.
Which means...
We got to do the speed run next, but probably it means we portaled right through some rift to get another... set of outfits that ultimately don't really change the game that much, right?
There were outfits in this game?
Oh, yeah, man. You get all kinds of different helmets.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, the three-piece, the armor sets. I thought of them as armor more than outfits. I don't know why that tripped me up. It shouldn't have. So let's do the speed run. Jesus,
yeah.
Mike's out of it. Jason... Usually we invite our guests to do the speed run, which is just a quick, elevator pitch, logline, synopsis, overview of what the game is to someone who had never heard of this game. Pretend they have no idea what Ratchet and Clank is. Would you be willing to do that for us?
Ratchet and Clank is a game franchise that is like a Mario-style platformer, only you have guns and tons of guns, and the whole point of the game is increasingly getting these increasingly powerful and or whimsical guns. This is the first one in the apparently long-running series I've ever played. I say apparently long-running because it turns out there is a lot of lore and backstory that it is helpful to know that I was completely unfamiliar with. But it is basically the first PlayStation 5 exclusive that really takes advantage of the hardware in terms of a AAA title. So if you own a PlayStation 5, and so far there's not been much of a reason to own one, and you're looking for a game that it can actually run that can only exist on that machine, you don't have a lot of choice. So here you go.
Stop the clock, which never started, or will Phantom start somehow? Which we've done a lot lately, so don't sweat it. But that was a phenomenal speed round. That's, I think you also gave us some social context, which people have come to expect from Jason Parjan, professional podcast guest. And that's wonderful. Platformer.
Yeah, it's a platformer.
Okay.
That's right.
I'll argue that point.
Okay,
let's
great.
Get into it. Great. Yeah. So we're going to pass another checkpoint, which means we flew to space as one sentient cat and then landed on another planet as a completely different sentient cat, who is the dimensional twin of the original aforementioned sentient cat. I guess there is a lot of lore now that I think
about
it.
Yeah, well, one thing is Lombax mm-hmm. thing, all like that alone is like, what's the mystery box of their origin story and stuff? Like, that's a whole... That's like a whole game, basically. Anyway.
I'll tell you what it is in my rant.
Which
May
you should
I
do.
Rant first?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So now that we passed our checkpoint and finished the speedrun, we're into the rants portion where we just give our personal take or opinion or a preview of what we want to dig into the most from the game. Player one, logging in, Michael Swain ranting at you about Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. I'll say this. It's Jack and Daxter. I mean, I just think it always... I know that I'm a Jack and Daxter apologist, but it must be said whenever this game is brought up that I do think it's fundamentally built in the, like, realm that Jack and Daxter franchise built. I would consider Insomniac sort of to be, like, following in the wake of Naughty Dog. And... the mystery box of where do the Lombaxes come from is exactly the same as the mystery box of what is Daxter, which is revealed at the end of Jack 3. And I won't give it away because, goddamn, that's a great set of games. I enjoy the thing that Ratchet and Clank does well, which is having its Dynasty Warriors style, like more enemies on screen and more bullets on screen and more little bits on screen. In fact, arguably the greatest feature of this game, to me, is how it feels to collect bolts. just like Sonic the Hedgehog is a middling game, but having rings and that unique sound rings make when you get them makes it feel better than it actually probably is as a game. Because there's, as you know, you can never unsee, once someone brought up, I think it was Adam, that it's a game about moving fast, but it moves so fast you can't control yourself and the levels are built to stop you constantly. That's a pretty bad game design, but I digress. I think Ratchet and Clank is an amazing Pixar level animated romp that's like packaged around a pretty bad game that's a ripoff of Jack and Daxter. End of rant.
Wow, that was quite a rant. Now, Jason, normally the guest goes next, but. I want to leave it up to you because I can also go next if you if you've got some prepared ideas that you like to finish up with. That would
also
be fine.
Normally we like say stuff about the guest and let them introduce themselves and provide context, which I'm realizing we blew by, and I'm sorry about that. But everyone listening to this knows who you are.
you can never tell what people know and don't know. It's so hard. It's so yeah. For very, I'll give people like 60 seconds. I used to be the executive editor at Cracked when Michael was there. Now I'm a full-time author. My last novel is called Zoe Punches the Future in the Dick. You can buy it anywhere. I have been, in terms of this particular podcast series, I've been playing video games since 1978 when my parents bought a Pong console when I was 3 years old. And I have owned at least one console in every generation ever since then. I only bought a PlayStation 5 because I feel obligated to buy every new box, whether there are games for it or not. So I have been playing games for however many years that is. I literally cannot do the math, 40 some years. But strangely, people who know me, somehow I'm also very bad at video games. And also, my opinions about video games also tend to be bad. I think Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is one of the worst games I've ever played in my life.
I love it. I love that. Oh, it's so good.
You just walked into a church and shat upon the altar.
You really
sir.
Did. You, yeah, that was the scene of Devil's Advocate when Al Pacino just sticks his finger in the holy water. that was solid, man.
Did that scene happen in that movie, or are you imagining it?
I've no, I think he does.
No, he yeah, he puts his finger in the holy water and it starts to boil.
And he oh, disrupts
so,
shit.
So great.
Yeah, he disrupts no. shit.
In terms of so Ratchet
how,
and...
Yeah, how did this purchase justifying game hit you?
Yeah.
I will say this. The graphics, this to my eyes, is indistinguishable from a Pixar movie. That you can somehow play. Now, mm-hmm. I do not doubt if there was an actual knowledgeable person, they could come here and say, oh, that's ridiculous. It doesn't render the fur nearly as well. The light ray tracing is poor compared to later Pixar. I'm telling you, to my eyeballs, what playing this on a 4K TV, it looked like a Pixar, not a DreamWorks movie, a Pixar movie that I could control fully. And if you had taken this game and shown it to the version of me in 1996 when I was playing... I don't know, Mario 64 and Pilot Wings on a Nintendo 64, and you said, this is what video games will look like in 2021, I would have said, this is all of my dreams come true. Like, I would have cried when I saw that. Because it's like, yeah, it's this is one of those games where you look at it and you say, you've now broken the limit of like what the eye can perceive in terms of making objects appear to be solid, you know, and whatever. In a fantasy world, if this was a game where we were playing the characters of the show Mad Men, I'm sure there would be all sorts of Uncanny Valley stuff. But in terms of playing an animated feature, this beats the original Toy Story, maybe Toy Story 2. You get into the later Toy Story movies, you say, well, you know, it can't keep up with individual hairs on the head or whatever. But it is
right.
an achievement. That is the only remarkable thing about this game. I think the camera and the visual presentation is legitimately bad. I think where it puts the camera and the particle effects that you mentioned are a ton of fun. People have not played the game. When you smash a crate, it breaks into a million splinters. And then if there's 150 coins inside, instead of getting 3 coins worth $50 each, there's 150 coins still out onto the ground, and then they all fly into your body. You can actually get an upgrade later where you can turn the coins into jewels, which I did, and it's even crazier.
Yeah, I love the skinnable particle effects.
Yep. Fantastic.
And, of course, the weapons wheel, but we say too much. So let's get this last rant.
You got it. Player 3, Adam Ganser, logging in. Okay, so I agree with everyone's summary that the graphics are stunning. They are stunning. In fact, the first couple of sequences of this game, there's so much going on that actually your eye feels a little undirected. Like, there's a lot of times in the first, like, 2 hours of this game, because it's so busy showing off how cool everything looks, that you kind of lose a sense of who you're supposed to be looking at. Which is a new problem.
It's more
in video
of a directorial
games.
Thing. Yeah.
Well, it's a new problem because video games have never been able to render that many things believably on screen at the same distance. So you never have these kinds of problems. So that's kind of a fun new issue that video games will have to deal with that movies have had to deal with forever. So I'm excited about that. The narrative here is better than normal for a Ratchet and Clank. Ratchet and Clank is kind of a very fill-in-the-blank adventure series. I thought the idea of having your sort of your opposite-ish clone or whatever, or what would you call a person who's in a multiverse? Like, is that
doppelganger?
I guess doppelganger. Great, thank you. like the fact that they're not exactly the same, but they're sort of like riffs on these people. That was interesting. The character of Rivet and her counterpart, whose name just flew out of my head, are
Bolt,
I think, right?
I don't know.
They are clearly better than Ratchet and Clank. Like, they are clearly more interesting because Ratchet and Clank have never been interesting characters. Never. They've never been interesting characters. And I think this character of Rivet, who is fine, she's not incredible either. She's performed better and has some interesting, like, insecurities and, like, talents, you know? And like,
a robot arm.
Yeah, like, she just has a little bit more personality. And it's like, oh, I'm way more interested in her than Ratchet. Like, way more interested. So there's, like, a little bit of, like, they're getting a little more adventurous with the storytelling here. Not enough. I think that's the thing that, because it's a Pixar presentation, I feel less satisfied with the story because I expect a story of emotional depth. That's what Pixar is so good at. They're not great because they render cool-looking images. They're great because they tell great stories. And Rift Apart's not quite getting there yet. It gives me some hope, though. I enjoyed the, you know, all the major beats that they laid down. Now, that said, about 10 or 15 hours into this game, I'm bored with it. You know, like, as cool as it is, as much as I enjoy all the gameplay loops, I'm just kind of bored of it by about 10, 15 hours. And I don't know exactly what would have made that different. I think it's probably story, and I think it's probably gun variety. Like, believe it or not, I kind of thought the guns were a little tame in this version compared to previous Ratchets and Clanks, where they were a little bit more wacky. And I think that's a fun thing about the series that they kind of pivoted away from for reasons that I suspect are marketing-based. So I like that. I have some reservations about the game as a whole. I streamed it. I think it's a great game to stream. People can like log in. It's very fun, and every 5 or 10 minutes something very eye-catching happens. And it's not hard enough that you're like getting beat up by the game a lot, which is a problem with some of these games. And just to counterpoint something Mike said, Ratchet and Clank is a contemporary of Jak and Daxter. Like, they literally, I think they're less than a year apart, the first two of them, which means Jak and Daxter did not create this idea at all. Like, they were contemporaries. I think you could argue Jak and Daxter is better, but Ratchet and Clank is its own unique world that has endured in some ways more than Jak and Daxter has, and I think that's worth discussing as well, and that is my rant.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Jak and Daxter has been a tabletop role-playing game since the mid-60s. No, I'm full of shit.
I was like, what?
All right.
Okay, that blew my mind. Shit.
I think both of those games came from players like me who would play a game like Mario, and you would get in there against Bowser, and all I would scream the whole time to the TV is, just shoot him in the head. Why didn't you bring a gun? Like, you knew you were going to have to take this guy out. Why didn't you bring a gun? And finally, like, a developer's like, you know what? That's right. Like, why would he go in there without a gun down the back
of his
pants?
You're a middle-aged Italian plumber. You're not packing a little pistola. Come on.
Yeah, to rescue a princess, you're going to go in there and just try to use what you find in the room? Like, that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. And, of course, when these games came out, the Mario games were just banished from the world. They're not, you know, they were too ashamed to release anymore.
He can't pack heat, so he's an irrelevant character
now.
By modern standards. Yeah. All right, we're passing a final checkpoint, which means we're heading back to Zircon Jr.'s arena only to find that they won't let us get the silver medal yet because we have to progress through the stupid plot first. And that brings us to Game On, the segment that's like a normal podcast where we all just chat. I did want to actually briefly touch on the weapons because I think of all the things that Ratchet and Clank boasts make it Ratchet and Clank, the one that's most defensible to me is the weapons that they have. I'll admit they have a lot of creativity to them, and the sheer quality of the animations that happen with the different effects of the different kinds of bullets you can lob at enemies is pretty spot on.
It's cool. Yeah.
There's a double deep weapon wheel of what? Like, so there's like 16 weapons total or 20 weapons total or some shit. What weapons did you guys like? And then Adam, it sounded like you were saying something negative about the weapons.
I just thought...
And I'm interested to hear more about that.
I don't want to like totally take over and do this long tirade here. Rant. But like... but I haven't played every Ratchet and Clank. The ones I've played are, I played a little bit of the old ones like years and years ago, but they didn't catch me. And then I played the reboot, the 2016 reboot, which I really enjoyed. And I thought that that game had more creative weapons. Like they had weapons like the disco dancing weapon, right? Where like you launch a disco ball and all the enemies, no matter who they are, boss or like, you know, random goblin, they have to start dancing. So, like, literally incapacitates mm-hmm. them, right? And they have things like that. Like, for instance, I figured out about halfway through this game, the sprinkler was, like, the best weapon in the game. Like, that's...
Yeah, the topiary
yes,
sprinkler's great.
That thing is, like, the best weapon in the game because it makes every fight manageable. Like, but there's a lot of dumb, like, here's, like, a weird AI-controlled thing that's going to sit next to you and do, like, a tiny little bit of damage. Or, you know what I mean?
Worst weapon in the game? That fucking ricochet gun that you have to time... rhythmically
yes,
time hits
yes.
and it bounces back and forth yes. against their head.
It
yeah,
looked
no good.
Cool, right? It looked cool, but it wasn't. And also, like, I want to say the sniper rifle, just because, like...
Almost unusable
yeah,
based on the way the game
use, right.
is.
And also, like, it's a sniper rifle, and this isn't Call of Duty, so I don't, you know, it's not the right game for that, in my opinion.
Sure. But they kept the pixelator, and they got that visual effect
it's
never
great.
Ceases to amaze me.
It's great. It is really good.
Yeah.
I just thought, like, as a whole, since you're going around buying all these weapons, there was a lot of... It just felt tamer to me. And maybe it's because the first time you play Ratchet & Clank, that seems very creative. And then after that, you're mm-hmm. like, okay, so this is kind of their thing.
Well, yeah, it's so much their thing that I think I found myself switching weapons out of a feeling of obligation. Like, well... That's the fun part of the game, so I better try all the weapons, even though I found topiary sprinkler and shotgun is the best
Definitely.
Combo.
No question.
Jason, how did you feel? Like, did you find yourself changing weapons with a sense of, like, joy and exhilaration or needing to do it? Or did you settle into a groove of, like, this works, I'll do this?
I feel like every game like this, because Borderlands is one of my favorite franchises, and that's the game that famously has... a million weapons, like, or literally millions of combinations of weapons, because
right.
they have like an RNG for different features. But they've got a bunch of, they're basically like fans call meme guns, where their guns are just a gimmick and they do something silly, like your bullets come out in the shape of a heart. But that's not useful in the game. So you get a lot of those and you use it a few times to amuse yourself. And it's like, oh, this gun farts when it shoots. But mm-hmm. it also doesn't do much damage. So it's like, okay, I use it a few times, I giggled, and then now it's just deep in my backpack somewhere. Because it's here, it felt like it was the same way, where there were many, many guns. The other factor you have guys not mentioned yet is there's this upgrade system where you collect these mm-hmm. crystals to upgrade the gun to add ammo capacity or whatever. You have enough crystals to effectively upgrade maybe 3 or 4 guns. And then everything
to
else is going
to
be,
yeah,
it's going to be underpowered. Or to, in my opinion, to get them up to a level where they actually just hold enough rounds or do enough damage that it's effective. So the moment the game becomes difficult, whether you're in a boss area or you're standing in an area with a lot of enemies, you find yourself just, or I found myself just falling back to the same few basic guns, the shotgun, and you know, you've got this. I powered up the little thing where you could summon a team of mushrooms to fight on your behalf because I like being able to summon like minions. And so, and then there's another one where you bring out like this little herd of tiny little robots that come and fight on your behalf. So I got to where I could do crowd control by summoning like 15
thousands
of those little robots
of,
and
yeah.
6 of those mushrooms, and they would just, I had this army fighting on my behalf. And in a game that manages, you know, tons of objects and particles and stuff, it's a lot of fun because you've got all these things out there fighting for you. But that, the moment things get hard, that's it. It's shotgun, mushrooms, little robot guys. And then when I got that sniper rifle later, I found there were enemies they had put really far away. The sniper rifle does a ton of damage if you
just
hit them.
Just to them. It's just
for
them.
Head.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, so what would happen was when I would get into these tough battles where they just swarm you with enemies, and then I run out of ammo for the guns I like using, now it is forcing me to go to the stupid guns or the guns that I don't have any experience with. And I know that in the game, the theory is, well, we'll make you use all of them because you're just not going to pick up any shotgun rounds from these crates. You have to go and use your shrub gun, or I apologize, I never know the proper names of things
in games. Topiary sprinkler.
Yes. Or the one that turns them into ice and whimsically makes them slide around. Oh, you know, you're gonna, and then that ricochet gun, I never figured out what it did. I pulled the trigger at enemies and nothing occurred, and then they killed me. So I just
it makes the little metal ball float next to them, and if you hit the trigger on a rhythm when the metal ball turns from red to green, it will ricochet off their heads over and over, and it is not worth it, the effort.
It does decent damage when you've really upgraded it, is what I'm told.
Yes.
Also, we're not mentioning the lightning rod. That's a good weapon that, like, does a lot of
incapacitates them.
Yeah, and that's kind of a new trend in weapons that you're seeing in actually, like, for real sci-fi shooters and stuff like Destiny. You're seeing these like area of effect weapons,
or even Hades. Chain lightning
That's kind of like, yeah, like also in that Returnal, they had a weapon like that in Returnal. So there's stuff here that's like kind of fun and creative, but you're right, Jason, it's like you kind of settle into a rhythm and you don't really have the resources to upgrade them all. And so you don't get that adventurous after you've tried it three or four times, and they're not good at explaining it to you either. You're like, okay, I don't understand how this ricochet thing works. It's totally valid.
Go ahead.
I will say this. It's rare that I find a game where I think they've done the economy perfectly. And when I see the economy, like here, like those crystals, like the way you get them, you know, that they're specific spots in the game, they don't regrow. You can't grind for them. Like there's a finite number you can get. Mm-hmm. And where it just... it's not clear, like the God of War games, like the newest one for the PlayStation 4, like that's one where the economy of that game made no sense to me, because you would get gear, but you also have levels, and then you have these runes, but it seems like the runes do almost nothing, and there's all these circumstances where you will try very hard to earn a thing, like the armor set in this game. It's like, well, this reduces damage from a specific type of enemy by 5%. It's like, well, am I going to notice that? Is it more just to dress up my character? Definitely. But they, like, when you compete to get, like, those golden bolts and you try to, there's, like, these hidden prizes in the game that are difficult to get. And it's like, well, what did I get for that? It's like, well, you can make your wrench a different color.
So in terms or of turn like, it into a fish or whatever.
So in terms of, like, the effort versus reward, and I always just describe all that as the economy of the game. Like, what do the power-ups do, and are there enough of them
when
you get them? Yeah. It's rare that I find a game that does it right. And this is a game where I feel like it didn't need it. Like those RPG elements, I didn't feel like it needed it at all. Just give me a gun that turns enemies into shrubs and then let me decide when's the best time to use that. When would be the most fun to use that. Don't then make me grind for, oh, I can add two more shots to its magazine or whatever. It doesn't feel a game that needs that.
Maybe it doesn't feel like a game that needs that, but I do feel like it feels like the game feels that it needs that, or like it's obligated to have enough robustness to be a quote-unquote modern game, because there almost aren't games anymore other than indie games that don't have an RPG-style tech tree.
Right.
It's starting to feel obligatory, and it's funny because there are elements, and that's sort of what this podcast likes to trace, is, you know, that ongoing like trends and dialogue that we see. Like the one that gets me is parrying is back in a big way. I think because of From Games.
Yep.
Parrying had a day and then it seemed to go away and now it's back. I was just playing a new game, Grime, and it's all about parrying at the proper time, even though it's a Metroidvania. Anyway, I digress. I wanted to ask Jason, not perfect, but what's a game that comes to mind when I say a game that did the economy right? You said there's few. Can you think of any?
That's a great question, because I like I said, I love the Borderlands games, but for example, you very quickly, you know, that's a game that's intended to be played for 500 hours. So you reach a point where the vending machines are meaningless. You're not going to find something in a vending machine. Like the money that you have is so over the top that there's nothing you can buy with it. So there's definitely a point where they didn't design an economy that could go on forever. but mm-hmm. it's one where I found it extremely satisfying in that the way that, you know, the way the enemies drop weapons, the way that you kind of know where to find them and can, if you want to fight something over and over again to better get a better, like I enjoyed going through that process. But games like The Witcher 3, arguably, some people say the
that's
best
one
game
of the worst
ever made.
Economies, though. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. That's a game where you will fight like a what you think is like a mini boss, and it will drop a bag of bone char. And you're like, what is bone char? Isn't that like an ingredient in toothpaste? Well, it turns out that it's a crafting ingredient for a mini game, like a chemistry, you know, alchemy mini game that hasn't even opened up yet. That will, if you get enough of it and six other ingredients, you will make a polish that you can rub on your sword that will make it 5% more powerful for the first 1 minute of a boss fight. It's like, who cares?
What, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
You're
just slash
me, like one button press. I'll have to
slash
like,
one extra time.
Like,
yeah.
One extra time. It's like, of all. So it's very clear to me there's a certain type of gamer, a certain category gamer that loves spending time in the menus. They love clicking around and going, sorting through all of their stuff. I know this is a big thing in the Elder Scrolls type games where you've got an inventory of thousands and thousands of mm-hmm. items you can collect and store, and that there is something people find very soothing about sorting through all that stuff, finding the best version, comparing, contrasting, discarding this, selling this, combining this. The a lot of games have a crafting system that kind of, to me, doesn't necessarily do anything. The Spider-Man games, these are games for the PlayStation 4 that are about swinging between buildings.
Fully action-driven, yeah.
Yeah, but you still find yourself spending a ton of time in these menus upgrading your suit or whatever. And it's clear that most gamers disagree with me. They like that element of digging around their stuff and sorting their stuff. And I'm sure there's some sort of like a primal hunting and gathering instinct that satisfies, where it's like I'm mm-hmm. collecting more and more stuff and I'm getting steadily better stuff. And even if it doesn't actually impact the gameplay in a tangible way, it doesn't matter. That's the joy of like collecting and nurturing this collection of stuff, and that's fine. It's just, for me, it just gets in the way, especially if it's a game that's built so much on action and so on. Like a game like Ratchet and Clank, yeah, I feel like you should not be spending a ton of time in the menus.
I can,
but that is very real. Like Pokemon is almost entirely built only on that sensation,
yes,
the joy of adding to your collection.
I can think of like two different experiences related to this that I like, and I can think, and maybe it's because they're more emotionally motivated. The first is the idea of purchasing like territories or like rifts in Grand Theft Auto, Vice City. What's the name of the, is it Vice City? That's the one that's in Miami, right?
Yes, it is.
So that's one where like you're spending money on like basically like a business, and the business is just going to give you more money, and money itself is basically useless with the exception of a couple things in all Grand Theft Autos, right?
Well, because people are constantly dropping whatever you need to pick up.
Yeah, so you're going to get every gun you need, right? So money is functionally useless in Grand Theft Auto, and yet you're still kind of encouraged to purchase and acquire these things on the, and the, it's all sort of like RPG elements here, right? And I think there the satisfaction is that like it feels emotional, it gets emotionally motivated, right? Like I feel more like a gangster when I've acquired these territories, even though it's functionally useless in actually expanding the story or acquiring new mm-hmm. items. It's functionally useless that way.
Or changing gameplay. It doesn't alter gameplay.
The other, and you're going to hate this, but it's true, I think, is all the Zeldas. I think Zelda's pretty good at economy stuff because either the items have like a kind of, it's like a tiny little side quest that leads you to a story unit, whether you like it or not, or like in the case of Breath of the Wild, when you're like acquiring all these elements for crafting or for, you know, creating new potions or whatever, you can use whatever version of income that you want. Like you can use all the crafting elements to bypass the money requirements if you want to. Meaning you can spend time collecting money if you want to acquire items, or you can spend time cooking if you want to, or capturing bugs if you want to. All of them get you to the same place, which is being able to get the items you want as long as you can discover where they're sold. And I think that's
better. So in that way, which is interesting, yeah, the economy almost allows you different avenues and different ways to play the toy.
Exactly.
Which is cool.
Exactly. Now, there is still a lot of nonsense in both of those examples. Like I said, they're both nonsense.
Like, I bet Jason's not a fan of the cooking path.
How
in
could he
Breath
be?
Of the Wild.
Are you? There's no way.
You're not going to want to get me started on it. It's everything about it. I found that, like, to cook a meal in that game requires like 8 button presses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I get there's a certain type of person. And I know there's even cooking games that are probably big in Japan, or mobile games, where people love the idea of like making these different dishes or whatever. But the fact that then I've got like my phone open, because it's the only way to figure out, wait, if I combine these ingredients, if you do it in the wrong way, it actually nullifies the benefits of the ingredients. And it's like, man, I just want a health potion. This isn't fun. Again, I'm spending all this time in a menu. And it's like, I don't enjoy that. You gave me this, you want me to feel wonder wandering around this beautiful land or whatever. And I'm spending all of the time futzing around in this menu and then figuring out how many mushrooms and whatever I'm going to combine. I didn't enjoy it, and thought the actual process that you, like when you would go to like an item vendor, you have to like click through multiple lines of dialogue to initiate the transaction. Just everything about it bugged me.
Okay, that's fair. That's right. I didn't mind that as much, but I see that.
But it's hard to overstate how important like the difference in just personality types and in what people enjoy in games. You guys have had previous episodes talking about difficulty in games. I'm someone who cannot tolerate frustration in a game.
Mm.
For other people, that makes it more rewarding. This boss, and you know, I will not play like the Bloodborne games or whatever, because it's always sold to me as, oh gosh, no, the whole point is you'll fight the same boss 128 times, and then you beat it on that 129th time, you just feel this wave of relief because you finally did it. And it's like, no, I have that in my real life. I have that in my everyday working life. In the 2 hours I get to play a video game for a little bit, I do not want to feel frustration. I want to feel, you know, release or whatever.
Well,
but that's not a bad.
And Bloodborne's also all about incredibly cryptic economies of items that you don't know what they are. So you would hate.
They're the very worst. Like for meaningful economy, there is no worse than From Software games.
And that's what I actually find annoying now, is there's a bunch of games, Salt and Sanctuary and Grime come to mind, that see the success of From games and try to adapt it to like a 2D game, which is right up my alley, but they also think that part of the success of Bloodborne was the inventory. So there's all kinds of things like spider tears, you know, like what the fuck is this for? And I really don't like that trend.
Yeah, and then they give you a poem instead of an answer.
Incredibly deep economies. Yeah. And the text, right. The thing that's supposed to explain how you use that item is now just a cryptic poem. In like many games, it'll be like, you picked up spider tears, and the information pane will say like, spider tears fall upon the cobweb floor. Like, all right, dude, I got 4 of those. I don't know what I'm doing here. It's part of a broader trend of, I think, devs assuming, which is really speaks to the direction of our whole culture in a weird way, that you're going to look up a bunch of stuff on Google, that like our brains are augmented by shared knowledge.
Well, I think it's interesting that the meaning of this game was sort of relegated to audio files and library files that were optional to collect. Now that's like not like this is the only game that does that. There's lots of games that do it.
Right.
But this game also purports to be telling a 3-act structured story with like, you know, emotional movements and relationships with the characters and stuff. And
I guess,
they do that. They went through
it's like
the strokes of it,
but it's like a Smurfs level narrative. It's for like, tweens.
Well, that's my, but that's my critique of it also, is that like, well, wait a minute, you actually have some interesting narrative here that could have been, you know, worked structurally into this story about the Lombaxes and some other things that they kind of
didn't. Adam, why don't you share that narrative with us in a nutshell? Because I don't know about you, Jason, but I skipped all that shit.
I skipped most of it, too, because I found it boring.
Oh, okay, so we don't know what the game's about.
I'm told it's there.
No. Well, for people who have not played it, like, it's a very, it has these themes of, like, very basic loyalty and friendship and whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like an unfolding murder mystery. It's very kid movie level. You know, first these two have some friction, but then they save each other's lives, and then literally one level later, they are friends, and it's fine. Yeah. But it's like, I finished the game because I had paid $70.
Right.
It wasn't like I was eager to find out. I mean, they spend the whole game teasing that the main guy, the Ratchet's going to go back to the planet of the Lombaxes. They come back to this plot point over and over again, and then
they don't go there.
They never go there. So I don't know if they were setting up a DLC or if they just did a sequel, or if that's just a reference. I don't know. But it was like the through line through the whole thing was that he was afraid to use this dimension technology to go find his own people. And then he just never did.
Well, and then in the third act, it really seems to focus on the subplot of that of the robot feeling bad that he is a war bot. And then what's her name? Rivet forgiving him. Or forgiving her. I forget what gender the second robot was, if any. But if a robot can be said to be gendered, which
coded,
I guess I shouldn't.
Coded female, I guess, is the idea, because you want...
Yeah. It just felt... Well, it speaks to the fact that I should amend something I said at the top. Obviously, it is a 3D platformer. I don't question that. I'm not going to try and make that kind of wild claim. But what I meant by that statement was, to my standards, it barely qualifies as a 3D platformer, because it is it's a shooter more than a platform. Like, right?
Yeah.
Because everything is so linear. That's my other problem with the game. Is
both things.
The locations are quite limited, and they're basically arenas within which to shoot. They are not 3D physics puzzles in the way that a Mario 64 was.
That's
true. Yeah, there's no difficult platforming that I came across. There's no like, oh gosh, this is my 25th attempt to make this jump. I'm going to make it this time. It's not like that. It's just there's a lot of verticality, and you're grinding on rails, and you'll get on a cart thing that zips you through a level. Like, it's a lot of traversal, but it's not like in Mario where the platforming is the challenge. The challenge is always shooting things.
Yeah, it's less platforming than a Destiny raid, really. You know what I mean?
That's a weird way to think about
true.
It. Yeah,
but it's true. It's less difficult than your standard Destiny raid. Which if anybody called that a platformer, I'd be like, get the hell out of here. Can I just I just want to put a bow on one last thing I was saying about the story. So when I say the meaningful stuff is all this Lombax backstory, which, as Jason said, is the thing you're kind of hoping is going somewhere. Right. And they're also kind of building it up. That idea of putting all that stuff in the background in the menus is also from the Dark Souls games. Like, this is like a thing in games now. It's like everybody's...
Well, and Doom.
But it's more... It's true. It's not like they invented it. But it's like really come into fashion because of those Dark Souls games, from what I can tell. Like, everybody's stealing from them. And I maintain, as we said in the Bloodborne episode, even if there's a cool story when you put it all together, I don't experience it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to sit here and read for 10 hours to understand the next 5 minutes of gameplay. Why would I do that? That's absurd.
Also, I don't need to read in small chunks interspersed with my gaming. Like, I'd almost rather play Doom Eternal all the way through, then read a novella after that that fills in all the lore, rather than read 6 paragraphs, play for a few minutes, find a little thing, read 6 paragraphs, play for a few minutes. I understand, which is ironic because I actually do get the inventory management joy. And like, I know our boy Abe also feels this way. I like messing with the inventory and the menus because it makes me feel like the game has two components and they refresh each other by alternating. I just like the variety of it. Especially if a game's very action oriented, I like the downtime, but I don't feel that way about anything other than inventory management. Like, when they try to throw lore at me, I'm like, why is this not a cutscene or something? At least,
well, I mean, you said Doom Eternal, which means you picked the absolute most ridiculous lore that I can think of. I was doing it as a bit on a stream, like reading the lore out loud. It's absurd. It's awful. Most lore is, right? Most lore is like, now, again, I've seen videos of people who will compile these like stories based on the lore, even in things like Skyrim. And it's like, that is kind of a cool story.
Well, that was the previous trend, right? Was to flex by having tons of lore, but it was not about the main plot. It was diegetic lore from the universe, right? Like Skyrim.
It's all
Lord,
it's like all Lord that Ring I'm shit. By. You know what I mean? It's all Silmarillion, you know?
Silmarillion.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're still doing that. They're just doing it in this Dark Souls-y way now, right? Where like even the meaning of your current event, like current like choices are obscured by like this weird twisted doll you just got or whatever the fuck, you know? I also don't like that. I feel like we can move on from this point, though. I don't mean to drag us backwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about the titular rifts? I feel like it's telling that no one has brought them up so far, but they were... Do you remember it? Like, so for people who haven't played the game, in this game, you can hookshot through these rifts that pull an alternate reality towards camera, and then it envelops camera, and now you're there. They're basically, well, not always, because sometimes you are teleported to an actually different reality, like a different skybox, different art assets, everything. And that's what was supposed to be really impressive, and it is pretty impressive. But a lot of times they're just teleport points with a graphical overlay. Do you know what
yes.
I mean? Like,
sometimes
without that little window effect.
Sometimes it pulls you 15 feet away.
Exactly,
right.
And that was, it's not. But it will occasionally do this thing that I truly think the PS4 could not do, or at least that was the claim, and I believe it, which is instantly load another level, essentially, and just fling you into another level as fast as the animation takes place. It's already rendered and you're in it, which is pretty cool. I did like that effect, so I feel like it's got to be mentioned as a technical achievement. I think I'm coming away from this conversation realizing Ratchet and Clank... And it is it's a flagship Sony series that they tend to trot out at the beginning of the life cycle of a console. It might be kind of a tech
yep.
demo of...
You got it.
Is that
yeah.
what Ratchet & Clank
they
is?
They have a few of these, man. Like, they actually have tech demos that they put on every PlayStation. They're also games.
Well, Astrobot
yes.
Go was good.
It was good. I think this is a better version of that. I mean, I don't mean to belittle it. I
lessens it in my eyes.
I know.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it. But yeah, that's what it is. Like, they went to all the meticulous detail to show off all the specific features that PlayStation 5 is supposed to be able to do, including, and I really like it, the DualSense stuff. Like, every time you fire a weapon, it's like, oh, that's a weird thing I've never felt in my hand before from a video game. And, you know, and it's cool.
Yeah, the haptic feedback is something we haven't touched on. It's very elaborate and impressive, and that's something that like the PS5 substantively has to offer.
No other place
that
has
actually
it.
Feels next gen. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
there's precious few games that are making good use of it so far.
I mean, clearly, yeah, of course, because like it's got to be a whole. You got to hire a whole other team, I imagine, to do that, right?
Right. Like, it's a whole separate string of code or layer of code to control that. Yeah. It's a whole additional thing.
It does enhance, though. Like, I don't want anybody to think it's not just like a rumble pack where it's like,
not
oh,
like
it's better.
It's not like 3D TV or something. I actually think it's something that will stick around.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be the norm. I expect Xbox and maybe even the Switch to come out with more advanced haptic feedback in this cycle because of it.
This is apropos of nothing.
You're gonna rant
that I've
Switch,
been playing
or is that what's gonna happen
on my Xbox lately more than my PS5. Why is the Xbox controller still battery powered?
That's stupid. It's
Why?
Fucking ridiculous.
Why?
I know.
Yeah, it's
you
so,
have to buy
so
a $30 part for their controller to be the equivalent of the much better PlayStation 5 controller. But to counterpoint that, and I know this isn't the episode for it, but I'll say it now. PlayStation 5's storage expansion is fucking bullshit compared to Series X's, which is just a card you stick in the back. You know? Mm-hmm. So anyway, we'll do that some other time. This is clearly a demo, and all the things that are good about it, it shows them off. And I like that about it. Like, why not?
I guess I like that about it. I also like that it features a character named Quark, but Dr. Nefarious is voiced by Armin Shimerman, who played Quark on DS9.
That's a weird connection.
That's my one fun fact.
I actually really liked the voice acting in this, personally, even though it was cartoonish.
Oh, yeah. They get pros. They all do a great job. I really liked Rivet's voice.
They should abandon Ratchet and Clank. I know that everyone's like, what? But, like, honestly.
Oh, I know. I agree completely.
Rivet's so much better.
Rivet and Bolt the whole time would be great.
Why not? Yeah. I mean, what's the difference?
I really hope that little robot's named Bolt.
I'm going to look it up right now to be sure.
Okay.
Because I don't remember.
Clank. It could be like Clink. I don't know.
I don't know either.
And DS9 featured a pocket mirror dimension where... All right, enough about DS9. okay, so we've covered the shooting, the graphical quality, the story quality, the platforming aspect. I mean, it's a short episode, but I'm going to ask, do people have more to say about Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart?
I think the camera is so bad that it almost ruins the game.
What's bad about it? Is it where it is? Like the high...
It's too close and too low to the ground when you're in a crowd fight.
Yeah.
So Michael loves the particle effects and the debris and stuff. This is a different brains work differently thing. Because when there's too much noise in the screen, it like hurts my eyes.
Yep.
And there are parts here where the whole joy of this game is supposed to be these fights are total chaos. And they will send 20 enemies at you. And then again, I'm using a style where I'm summoning more. And then every enemy explodes into a million parts. Every time you break a pile of crates, they explode into a million splinters and then release a million coins. And the screen looks like a tornado in a junkyard.
Yep, it does.
It is just full of particles. So in my opinion, it seems like there are basic like game design and art design things where your eye should be drawn to what's important. And I think about 30% of the damage I took in this game was stuff spawning behind me. Because it does not indicate that it's back there. If there was an indication, like a clear indicator or a noise or something to warn you, like fair play, there's something coming up behind you. I never adapted to it. Because there is so much junk on the screen that even if there was a HUD element or something, your eye wouldn't pick it out, or my eye wouldn't pick it out. Again, different eyes, different brains work differently. It became overwhelming to the point that I thought this is like legitimately bad. I can't see what progress I'm making in this battle. I can't tell how many enemies are left. I can't tell which are enemies and which are objects, friends, background, because it's all... They're so eager to show off this particle effect and just filling the screen with these tiny little objects that it's, you know, and there are some weapons that spark or explode when they hit you. And so you've got now sparks flying around that I, especially in like in those little arena levels you mentioned earlier, when you get the bronze, silver, gold, gold medals and you get prizes for doing it, those are in a very contained space. And the whole point is it's like this battle royale with a bunch of enemies that keep pouring in. That I thought it like that camera needed to zoom out a little bit and pull back a little bit the way it does in God of War, but even
that
in
would have
like
been a
the,
nice option.
But again,
the
Mario
new God of War game has this problem where it stays too close to you when there's enemies all around you. There's probably no perfect way to do it. Again, if there was an actual game designer here, they would probably say, well, it presents problems doing what you're asking, but. There, I think half of my deaths were falling into holes that were just not visible because you're running along and the camera is low and behind you and there's like you're on a planet and there's like a ridge there, but it's utterly invisible to you until you've fallen in it because the way the camera's just angled too low. And I guess if I was that character in real life running along there, I also wouldn't have seen it, but it just means the game stops for a moment while I reload and I have to jump over it. It felt like something that was very fixable.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was getting at with my directing the eye problem. I think you summarized it perfectly. I'm glad you mentioned God of War, too, because I never said this, but it's every time I've gone back to play that game, I feel too close to the character. And I think you're right about that.
I think that... Well, this is a whole different debate, but I do feel like in God of War, it was a very intentional choice to make it feel like a reboot because the camera distance in the original God of War trilogy is a very, very specific camera distance, and they changed it. They weren't going to zoom out, so the only option was to zoom in.
Yeah, well, they were,
you know,
right.
To give it a new look, a new feel.
It was very like Gears of War, you know what I mean? It was like...
Well, they wanted you to feel like you were with Kratos emotionally, whereas in the first three, they felt more arcadey, like you're controlling a little body from a distance. I appreciate that artistic decision. I actually think it's smart. But I can see, like, I think what we're getting at is Ratchet and Clank is not a game about precision skill, and it doesn't reward precision skill. It's about plowing joyfully through it to the end. And yeah, you'll fall in some holes, but who cares? It's going to bump you right back to where you were, and you'll just jump over it this time.
Yeah, that's
exactly. It's kind of like bowling with the, you know, the bumpers.
But to go back, like, even Mario 64, which has real camera problems, also first game to ever try to tackle that problem, right?
Right.
They understood, hey, we need an option so you can scoot back. Like, that was one of the most, that was one of the first camera control decisions they made, being able to widen
out. GTA 3 as well.
Yeah, it's really important for exactly this reason. So that's a great observation. The name of the name of the other, the girl, quote unquote, robot is Kit. Kit, Mike, not Bolt. Kit.
Bolt is better. I guess they're collecting bolts, so
they must
that
not
would be
have
confusing.
Said Kit out loud enough times in the game, because I could not have told you that with a gun to my head.
Yeah, no way.
I would never have remembered that. Not to circle back with the story stuff, but that's. I mentioned it, and we never kind of came back to it, how much like lore and backstory there is. You have to understand, people have not played this, there's a bunch of like comedic scenes that are comedy scenes where you meet a wacky character, and the entire thing that is wacky about that character is, oh, this is the character you know and love from Ratchet and Clank 3
right.
or whatever. Look at how crazy it is that that character is now doing this. If you don't have that context, it makes no sense. And there's no, like, there's a point where there's like a superhero and he's pretending to be a pirate, and the entire joke is just baffling if you don't know what this person is supposed to be doing or who they are or how they got there. It's entirely based on you knowing who that is. A lot of the comedy beats, a lot of the stuff that's supposed to be make this enjoyable assumes a ton of knowledge. And maybe they've sold a bunch of these games. Maybe that's a safe bet. But this is a case where this game is being sold to, hey, if you own a PlayStation 5, this is kind of the only game in town for a game that looks like it could only be on the PlayStation 5. So I'm wondering how many people who are playing it have any idea who these people are.
I mean, I know that I played the first reboot like maybe 3 months before this came out, and I still felt lost about a lot of those jokes.
I was gonna say, it's not just that it's information you needed to retain, there's no incentive to retain that information.
Right.
Like, who's burning brain cells remembering Ratchet and Clank lore? It's not important. So it's funny that they bank on it as if you would remember.
I briefly want to complain about the Clank interstitial game things. Like the throwing of the balls into the dimension unlocking.
Oh, you
the
mean
lemmings.
The obligatory puzzle segments they use to freshen it up.
I was a reviewer, I would take a full star off this game because those are mandatory.
They're horrible.
If those were side, if those were optional to win upgrades, no problem. Some people like the Spider-Man hacking mini games.
Right.
The fact that they force you to do them and they come at a place when you're eager to like progress to the next thing. It hurts the experience badly, to the point where if I did not have to finish the game for this podcast, I probably would have stopped playing because of those mini games.
They were really bad. I agree. Although, they were really bad. I didn't enjoy them. People on my stream were mad. They were like, can't you skip this? And I was like, nope.
The very last one was quite a chore.
Yeah, it's just like, I get it. You know, like he's making a connection in his brain, but also that's what cutscenes are for. You know, like
did you like the tank mini games with the spider robot drone character?
They were better.
I thought that was
fine because
it's just shooting. Yeah. It's just a little shooting, arcadey shooting thing. And it's just nonstop shooting, action, missiles, stuff exploding. Like, it's fun. If you want to describe these mini games, I compared them to like the hacking mini games in Spider-Man, where all of the action stops. So you can work this slow puzzle in dead silence, and you're like slowly trying to make this. It's literally you're trying to build a circuit or a connection.
Right.
You know how hacking minigames work, only it's not like a mobile game thing. It's a fully 3D realm where you have to, you know, combine this circuit to this, and you're trying to literally complete the stream of things to reach the other end of a thing. And it's just this long, slow. There's no action, no shooting. You're using a completely different character. There's no jumping, no platforming, no nothing. It's just this move this here, now move this here, now move this here to raise this lever, now move this here to raise this platform. It's just slow, and it doesn't feel satisfying to do it. It's not the kind of puzzle that makes you like feel like a genius because you did it. In many cases, it is kind of just a brute force approach.
Like, no, in my problem with the puzzles is the answers were straightforward. They just required a lot of backtracking.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as you saw it, you would go, oh, that orb goes there and that orb grows there. All right, I got to walk over and get that orb and put it over there.
Yep, that's yes.
Because it's... I don't know why they're included. I don't know if it's just to extend the runtime of the game. Again, it seems like if you went in that bar area and you went up to a little arcade cabinet and that was like a little game in there,
right?
You may stumble across like, oh, this is fun, and you get an armor set for completing all of them. I could see somebody doing that if they're bored enough. But to say to progress the story, you have to do this and you have to come back and do it. Was it five times?
It's like four. Or I think five there's times. Five. It's a lot.
And I think it's to give Clank something to do that feels concrete as a plot. Like, Clank contributed. He's the hacker.
Which should tell you that he doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, that's the problem, is like they actually expose the fact that neither Ratchet nor Clank matter, because they're both just around. You know, we gotta add stuff for them to do. And it's like, well, these are your protagonists. What are you doing? Anyway, I know we're going to keep getting Ratchet and Clank games, but I will be playing the Rivet and Kit games going forward, I hope. Because, you know...
I assume they're going to keep Rivet and Kit around.
It ended question.
Seeming like they will,
no
yeah.
No question.
And I'm guessing there's a lot of pornographic fan art out there already of Kit and Ratchet.
Of Kit and, yeah.
There's got to be, gotta be.
A lot of us didn't know if these two were going to have sex at the end of the game, because it's like, well, now, wait a second. Are they supposed to be like brother and sister? Because the whole idea is that she's like the mirror image of him from another dimension. But that's – I don't see why them having sex in that circumstance would be against God's law. I mean, they're – I don't know. But it's – who am I to say? But they don't – at the end, I think it's implied that they just kind of – they have, I guess, a platonic friendship, which is also fine. It's just I have a feeling that the world's fan artists will take that to the next step. And yes, someone is pasting in an image right now. Yeah.
I believe it is Kit taking an upskirt photo of Ratchet, or I'm sorry, of Rivet as she climbs up a ladder.
Well, you were right.
So fast.
You were right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. There's tons of it.
There are some things, you know, there are some things unexpected about that image that we don't need to talk about now, but, another minor, this is an extremely minor note that I did note it because it plays into, so a lot of times the comedy bits will play out with characters talking during the action scenes, because there'll be, you know, like you're supposed to go, I remember the sequence where you're like following this prison cell thing that's flying through the air, and then someone is doing like a voiceover telling you, and then someone else is arguing with them, and it's very funny, or it is probably very funny. But as happens in Borderlands, as happens in so many games, the audio files are playing while you are shooting and while things are exploding. So you can vaguely hear someone talking, but you mentally are not focusing on what they're saying. And you physically cannot hear what they're saying because everything is exploding all around you, because you're shooting nonstop. The enemies are shooting nonstop and there's stuff smashing and exploding. Every game does this that has like audio stuff where they were literally like in Borderlands, they will literally have you find an audio log, pick it up, click it to play, and then that triggers an ambush.
Yep.
People immediately attack. Yeah.
They immediately attack, and they had to have known when they were playtesting. It's like, oh, they didn't hear. You spent money to bring in voice actors to act out this comedy skit that no one's going to hear, because how many people, once that's over, are going to go through their menus and see, well, is there a way to replay that? And the answer to Magic Clank, I think, is no. It's like, that's just gone. But there were probably a lot of clever, witty moments, or maybe there were, I don't know, that I just didn't hear.
Too few games have learned the lesson from Portal 2. Which is, it's fine to let your character walk through a weird ambient place and give them funny dialogue. without action, like that's fine, right? Like Portal 2 is like such a perfectly paced game for comedy because, you know, they'll let you run through, like, you know, here's a bunch of weird science-y shit that kind of gives you story, but not always. And then they'll populate
it. It's really just a hallway to give you time to hear
and
the dialogue.
It's not like Ratchet and Clank don't have long segments that are running through hallways or zipping around on a weird, like, cricket that, you know, runs fast or whatever. You know, they have the space for this.
Right. When you're grinding rails, you know, talk to me then.
You know, so it's weird. It is weird that they do that because I felt that way too. Like there were just things that got on top of each other a lot in this game, just like visual things and sound things, and it felt a little rushed. Although, I will say it became very apparent to me as I was playing the game why this studio was tapped for Spider-Man, because they have exactly the right tone for Spider-Man. And they kind of nail it every time. And it's like, yeah, this is the right tone for that.
And their actual model animation is probably the best in the business.
Yeah, it's very good. I agree.
The satisfying way physics connect and things, they really feel like cartoon characters getting hit by bullets in a way that is like more impressive than that sentence makes it sound. They react like they're animated, like they're truly cell animated. It's pretty impressive. Whereas every other video game baddie that gets hit, it feels like a canned animation from a video game. These ones feel like canned animations from film.
Right.
It really is a cut above. Just the animation and the rendering of the models.
Almost the way that it felt when you were playing GoldenEye the first time and you shot a guy in the leg and he held his leg, you're like, oh wow. Like there are moments
it knows I shot him in the leg.
There are moments that are the equivalent of that with animation in this game with like explosions and deaths and stuff that are like, wow, that was very like specific for that.
The enemy really reacted specifically.
And it's cool. You know, like if you had time to look at it all, you'd probably really admire it, you know?
Yeah. And there was some enemy, some robot where there was like a little guy in a cockpit and I shot the cockpit and there's this little animation that played out where he like jumped out and did a backflip and landed back in the cockpit or something. I saw it at like the very end of the game after fighting many, many, many of these enemies because it was a little touch that you don't see because there's so much junk on the screen.
Oh yeah. It took me forever to realize that after they hit you, they'll celebrate.
Yeah.
Like when an enemy hits you, they'll dab. And
I never saw that.
Great.
I am surprised to hear that. I'm now going to go to YouTube and find a clip of that because my eyes never registered that because they didn't give me that as like a little fun focal point.
It took
something
me most
to
of the game to realize every enemy has not only a death animation, they also have a I hit Ratchet animation, like I succeeded and I pump my fist or whatever. It's pretty involved.
I mean, again, it's like this game felt like it needed to be 20 hours. Like it felt like the designers believed this needs to be 20 hours and it didn't. It needed to be 10. And I understand that like they feel obligated to redo, like to include everybody you've seen in a Ratchet and Clank so far. And like do everything that a previous Ratchet and Clank did, plus this.
Well, they didn't do the hoverboard.
No, they didn't.
Ratchet and
they
Clank,
didn't do the jetpack,
which I missed.
But like, I think that I just go back to almost every great beginning of a franchise is pretty simple. You know, like they're pretty simple. They're straightforward, and there's nothing wrong with like retreading that experience in a video game. You know, like you can expand it in some ways, but don't feel like every single thing we've done, we got to do it again. Because then this game feels bloated and you're tired of it. And then you don't get to appreciate the really cool artisanship that's being done all over the place in it. You know, and they know that it feels long, so they're jamming stuff on top of each other. You know, like it's a symptom of a problem.
But the money factor is real. If this was a 5.5 hour game, it would have been really sweet and delightful. But if I paid $70 and it was 5 hours, I'd be pretty disappointed.
That's true. And you and I also argued many times about could you even make a $70 version of a 5 hour game? I don't know. You know. Anyway.
Yeah.
These days, I don't think so. I think people perceive value differently, and the concept of games that you can play forever, that Fortnite, you know, you've got 2,000 hours in it and you
still feels fresh and
it's free or whatever, and that these are the idea of a game that you play through in one weekend and then it's done. I think the value proposition is probably just And that is why I think they add a lot of the RPG elements and stuff we mentioned earlier, where it's like, well, you can go through and collect all of the armor sets. And it's like, yeah, but why? They don't affect gameplay at all. But the answer is just to give you a reason to fire it
every time.
To go in and mess with it. And if you enjoy spending time in that world, that's fine. Now, I suspect the people who are listening to this, some of the people who don't listen to like every episode of your show but are listening to this one, it's because they don't yet have a PlayStation 5. And they want to hear, like, what does this do? Like, what does this game promise in terms of what the PlayStation 5 can do? In terms of what that machine cost, I don't think it makes the case yet that, like, every generation, I don't want to necessarily.
Yeah, it offers, like, faster load times, lots of particles, and haptic feedback. Those are the big
offers.
Everybody's
got to know that, like, PlayStation has said they're going to keep servicing PlayStation 4 for 2 or 3 years. So
for four more years,
two or three, I don't know what it is, but that means your PlayStation 5 games are never going to look like several cuts above until they stop doing that. You know, like
by the time they're just starting to promote the PS6, the PS5 will be entering its golden age.
Right, which is bullshit. I mean, like,
That tends to be how it goes, though. The developers get better and better on the platform over the life of the platform.
True, but like servicing an old platform for that length of time is completely absurd.
It is unusual.
And also,
it's
like,
unprecedented.
This is a controversial opinion, but like, I think in some ways, Cyberpunk, like, was attempting to leave some of these old consoles behind, which they shouldn't have done. But I think that's what they were doing,
I think that goal got compromised, and that was one of the big problems with Cyberpunk, is then they ended up saying, never mind, it can work on your PS4,
and it can't. Right, and it's like, if PlayStation had been, or Xbox, had been willing to say, it's a next-gen-only game, it would have disappointed a lot of people, because they were promised the game for PS4 and for Xbox One.
And it's so hard to get the PS5.
But also, everybody would have been a lot happier with that arrangement, ultimately. You know, like, in the long term, people would have been like, that was a good game, and it was totally worth being an exclusive, you know, or a better game.
When can I stream Cyberpunk on my Switch? That's all I want to know.
When the new, bigger screen mode comes out.
But the OLED.
Even if, and I know that, like, a lot of the E3 stuff, with the pandemic, well, you know, a lot of games are being worked on. There's trailers we would have seen by now that it's everything had to be put on hold. I get that. But with each generation, there's usually a brand new type of game that comes along that couldn't have been done before, you know, like Mario 64 in the era of the games becoming 3D, and then of course the PS2 era and the idea of the open world game and the vast open world and the Grand Theft Auto style that dominated for a while. I guess the most recent innovation probably is like the Battle Royale games where you're able to get 100 players. Like, that technology was not a thing.
Right.
Where you can have 100 players all playing
all
a high-definition game, all live in the same vast playing field. Like, that's – so each time out as the new technologies come, there's generally been a type of game like this type – this genre of game is new and can only be played on this machine. There's no hint of that for what that'll be for this era.
Not yet.
Like, there's no trailer, there's no promise, there's no rumor of a game. Like, the next Horizon Zero Dawn, which I will pre-order the moment it goes up for pre-order, that's been delayed to next year, but that was developed for the PS4. Like, that's a PS4 game that's going to have, like, a high-res texture pack on it. And, again, I will play the hell out of it, but it's not doing something new. And I've not even heard vague talk of what that game will be. Like, this is a game when you see the trailer for it, it's like, oh my god, like, how is that even possible?
I have high hopes for Deathloop.
Me
I
too.
Think Arcane's really innovative, but I still didn't look at the trailer and go, we're in the next generation now, baby. I just looked at it and was like, yeah, Arcane are good. I bet this is very cleverly put together.
I think there's one clear answer to this, gentlemen. Grand Theft Auto 5 again. Because that's what's coming in November.
Well, that's what's coming. Yeah.
I can't believe that shit.
I cannot wait to play that game on the fourth console I've played it on, I think.
Exactly. Unbelievable.
Rockstar owns us so hard. just working at IGN, you get a data insights. Like, I think the biggest story of the year last year was Rockstar confirms GTA 6 will have a single player mode. And it's like, yeah, of
come
course
on.
It was gonna.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Yeah. And it's like the biggest news story of the year for us because people are so thirsty for. They just said GTA 6. What's this about GTA 6? GTA 6. It's a powerful. It can't be overstated how powerful GTA is.
Well, they've been working on it like 10 years, so good luck to them. Good luck. Anyway, should we pass our final checkpoint?
Yeah, take us gingerly
I shall,
through.
Yes. So here we are. Coming all the way back to our home dimension to fight, you know, both of the bad guys at once and decide whether we will keep or delete this game from the celestial hard drive that we will be sending to the aliens that best represents video game excellence. Jason, are you going to keep this game or are you going to delete it?
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Yeah. Delete it. This is a game that 7 years from now when the PS5 is... Because this game got generally good reviews.
Yeah.
It's fine. But I think 7 years from now when the PS5 has had like several classic games and several new monster franchises and it's in full swing and is on its way out almost, and we'll look back at this as the first game and it will be utterly unremarkable. The same as that. What was the first game for the Xbox One? That Rise or whatever it was
Rise
called?
Of Rome. Oh, yeah.
Where at the time it was like, you know, it was enough of a tech demo. Some people were like, oh, well, you know, you almost got to see it just to see the graphics. Whereas now if you played it, it'd be just like, what even is this?
Yeah. Like The Order 1886. That one was Killzone.
So
like,
yeah.
Oh, like, Killzone. Yeah, they were like, look at the new graphics.
Look at it.
Yeah. And you're like, but this so is like, just walking forward and shooting.
Now I can show this like to my wife and it's like, well, but do you see like it didn't load? And it's like, well, yeah, but it, you know, Titanfall 2 also immediately switched levels as a puzzle solving thing. It's like, well, yeah, but it's like there's no load screen before a new planet loads. It's like, well, yeah, but it also does play like this long animation of the ship landing that's hiding a load screen. it's all stuff that it's so much better than the
incremental
PS4.
Quality of life.
It's incremental, but
yeah,
it's not going to be remembered for any reason.
That's fair.
And again, to be clear, anyone who's listening to this, God forbid, if you worked on this game. I know this game was finished in a pandemic. Had to have been,
probably.
Right? The timeline for when it came out. So I do not doubt there were even features or levels that were supposed to be in a Rift Apart that got dropped because people were having to work from home away from their tools and were working under extremely difficult circumstances. If we have criticized anything here that is only like that because of the pandemic, I apologize. It is a miracle that any games exist at all.
Yeah.
And if you just look at the erotic art alone,
you've
like,
done something.
You've brought joy to people.
You've done something here.
You have done something.
Yeah.
You had an impact on the zeitgeist. It's a delete from me, Adam, as well.
I
think our illustrious guest spelled out why perfectly.
I also am going to delete this. I'm not sure I would keep a Ratchet and Clank on this hard drive at all.
Think you know my answer on this
front?
Yeah,
although I will say that it made me reconsider some things about Psychonauts, but...
But you might not keep a Jack and Daxter either,
I might not. Yeah, because, like, honestly, I don't know if any of those games are adding anything that aren't better in either a shooter or a Mario game. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know.
I mean, if we ever cover any of them, two would be the one to cover, and I disagree just about two, but this is not the time.
Fair enough. Jason, thanks so much for being on. We loved having you.
Yeah.
You have anything you want to plug?
The book that I mentioned earlier, also, if you want my own writing, I'm at Substack, jasonpargin.substack.com. Substack is just a blogging platform that will email you the columns to your inbox if you prefer to browse the internet in your email inbox, as people apparently do now, because everyone's migrating to Substack. So
yeah, Schmitty the Clam does that too, newsletter style. People like that.
Yeah, and Patreon set up so that if you post there, it automatically emails people. That's the new hot thing. I personally cannot fathom reading internet content that way, but I appreciate that people like the option. So Jason Pargin, my name, .substack.com. Substack is S-U-B stack.
I still get emails from Louis C.K.'s Substack, so you're in fine company.
Wow.
Was that the end of the episode?
Work complete.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
You ever get that feeling like the concrete jungle's closing in? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to chase your own dinner, or just breathe clean air. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there waiting, and finding your piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, price, location. They've got it all. No matter what kind of wild dream you're chasing, land.com can help you find the ground to make it a reality. So quit dreaming. Head over to land.com, find your open space, and get out there.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.